Have fun, New World.
Are we good?
We're good.
Okay, here we go. It's the New World. Coming down in 3, 2, and 1. Elliot, I would like to start today's bizarre podcast where you're at home, I'm at home, and Amel's at home with this tweet, hashtag Ask31. Is the information from the beginning of this podcast still relevant? That's from Mike Hess. Thanks, Mike.
Everything we knew 2 days ago does not exist. It doesn't matter anymore except for stay inside. That's the only information that's relevant.
Yes. Don't be like me. Don't go into work. Went in today to do Hockey Central with Berkey and Anthony Stewart as well. More on that later. Meantime, hi, welcome to our new world, Elliot Friedman and Amel Delich. We're all doing this podcast from our places of residence. And something we had, Elliot, on the last podcast that you would like to revisit for this week's edition of 31 Thoughts.
It got cut, unfortunately, because everything kind of changed so quickly after last Wednesday's games when Rudy Gobert tested positive for the coronavirus. But we made a reference to it. There was one point in the podcast where you quoted Hemingway and I said, drink. And some people tweeted at me and they said, what are you talking about there? What does that mean about drink? And I realized that unfortunately, because of the craziness, we had to cut out the 31 Thoughts podcast drinking game.
This is so good.
And I forgot the name of the tweeter.
Ah.
I really and hugely apologetic for this, but I lost the name of the tweeter. If I find it, oh, wait a sec. There it is. It's at Liam_Morrison95. So here is the 31 Thoughts podcast drinking game for your enjoyment. Drink if there is a countdown to begin the podcast. Drink if Elliot mentions he used to cover the NBA.
You've stopped doing that, by the way. Actually, now you only do it, but ironically, which is probably even worse.
Well, now I'll do it to get people hammered while they're sitting in.
Fair.
Two drinks if Mara quotes a philosopher. Drink if Elliot says, I'm a big believer in. Two drinks if Merrick tells a 50-plus-year-old hockey story.
Oh, listen, now that there's no actual NHL going on right now, or actually any hockey at all, you can be guaranteed I'm going in the Wayback Machine for hockey stories on this podcast.
You're
going
to get bombed. Three drinks if Merrick brings up the McDavid Marlboros.
Oh, great team. Sam Bennett, Jeremiah Addison, Jaden Lindo, Joshua Hosang, Roland McEwen, some heavyweight minor hockey players there, Elliot.
People aren't even going to get through the introduction. Drink if Merrick has an obscure idea for a rule change.
I've heard a lot of that. Okay, I got a couple, actually. Wait till you hear the Stanley Cup one that I have for you later on the pod.
Oh, my God. Drink if Elliot references people who are much smarter than him.
Yeah, you do that a lot.
Three drinks if either Jeff or Elliot quote Doug McLean's, I'm not saying it's true, I'm just saying that's what I heard.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. I quote that every couple of days. I don't think I'm going to stop now. What about you, Freach?
I'm not saying it's true, I'm just saying that's what I heard. Drink every time there is any mention of Western or Guelph. Ooh.
Yeah, no reason to do that anymore. We know which team has hockey supremacy.
That's right. Western won their game at the CIS championship before it got canceled. So we know the truth. Yawn. That they didn't cancel it because of the, or sorry, they call it U Sports now. They didn't cancel it because of the coronavirus. They canceled it because they didn't want Western to win.
Right. Let's go with that story. Any more? Is that it?
That's it.
Okay, here's your challenge, everyone listening to this podcast now. Add to that list. There are plenty of things that Elliot and I do, I'm sure, on a consistent basis that are annoying and even worse, predictable. Unlike, and I think you mentioned once that Jim Houston is the only broadcaster without a crutch, I have many. Please identify and call me out on all of them. That's what social media is for.
I am working on getting rid of my main one, which is the word like. I listened to one of the podcasts recently. I must have said it 750,000 times. I was disgusted listening to it, and I'm going to stop doing it.
Didn't you try to do this on the podcast last year? What were the words you were trying to get out of your vocabulary?
And I think I did get them down, and like started to come up more often. So I'm going around in circles trying to finish it.
Okay, so like and I mean are the two biggies that I was told to completely get out of my vocabulary, and I failed spectacularly at both. But hey, listen, I need stuff to do just like you do, Elliot, just like anybody in our profession needs right now. So maybe I'll work on that. Friege, before we get the podcast going with a couple of different ideas, and a little bit later on, we'll hear from Commissioner of the ECHL, Ryan Creelan. Where is the NHL right now with the, what do we call it, the 2020 freeze? Where are we at?
You know, the best thing I heard, honestly, Jeff, was I spoke to one agent and he just said, this is the hardest thing, but everybody just needs to chill for about 55 days to see where we are. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do because we are a society that thrives on certainty or as much of it as we can create. We want answers and we can't have them. But I think he's right. With the Center for Disease Control saying no gatherings of more than 50 people until the middle or the second week of May, we've got no choice. We've basically been told that we have to take a timeout and see what happens out there. Okay, so we kind of know that. I think one of the biggest questions right now for the NHL season is going to be what happens with the Olympics. If the Olympics go on as scheduled, I don't think you can play after July 24th, which is when the Olympics are scheduled to begin. But if the Olympics are canceled, I think you could see them going into August.
You could see the NHL playoffs going into August.
Yes.
I want to pick up on that, but first, the Center of Disease Control as well, mentioning, you know, 8 weeks and then we'll, you know, reevaluate.
We'll see.
And then we'll see. Honestly, I don't know how much stock I put in that. And as the days go on, as the numbers get higher and, you know, the fatalities continue to pile up, I say to myself, 8 weeks is generous. Like, when Brian Burke mentioned last week, almost right away, I can't see how we're playing hockey at all this season. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's Brian's opinion. I'm warming up to what Brian's saying now, more so than ever. Specifically when on Monday you have the White House saying, you know, July or August, this will still be a significant threat. Honestly, I don't, Elliot, see any way that the NHL or any hockey league is playing at all.
Here's the way I look at it. And the chances are, Jeff, the odds are with you. If you are wagering on this, and I really hope you don't have such a problem that you're wagering on this, but you're right, or the odds are better with you. This, to me, is a very pessimistic time. Most of the people I speak to in hockey are very pessimistic right now about the possibility of playing in June or July. And the reason is it's finally hit us. Number two, the numbers and reported illnesses and deaths are going to go up. It's going to be very hard to be, we're all sitting inside now. It's going to be very hard to be optimistic about where this goes because we're going to hear more cases. We're going to hear more deaths. We're going to hear everything bad. The thing is, though, if you take a look at some of the figures that are also coming out, in terms of flattening the curve, or once serious measures were taken, they do start to slow down. Now, I'll tell you this. One doctor I spoke to, he said to me, the answer we don't have now is there a second wave? Is everybody going to relax when the numbers start going down and then you get careless, or we drop our defenses and the numbers come back up again? That's one thing we don't know right now. I agree, Jeff. I think right now this is a pessimistic time and pessimism rules, but I think there are people who look at it no other way as saying, if people behave and social distancing actually works, and you're not like those people on Clearwater Beach or at Queen's University who are threatening to go out for St. Patrick's Day,
yeah,
then they want to see, can this be successful?
So on that, cheer up and welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks.
I want to remind all Canadians that they should avoid non-essential travel outside of our country until further notice. Canadian travelers should return to Canada via commercial means while it is still possible to do so. Let me be clear. If you're abroad, it's time for you to come home. All Canadians, as much as possible, should stay home. By staying home, you can not only protect your health and that of those around you, but ensure that our healthcare professionals and our healthcare systems can focus on those who need their help. This is an adjustment for all of us. We know that staying home is an important step to protect the community and each other. We all have to do it.
Okay, Elliot, we'll try to keep the COVID-19 talk to a minimum. That is the reality of what we're dealing with. I apologize for Astro in the background right now. Someone has just come to the door. As you can tell, we are
That's
doing
real life, though. That is real life.
Our contractors come to the door and the dog is barking. Astro, calm down.
And as for the COVID-19, we're going to try to give people some fun. We know you might be COVIDed out, so let's see if we can do some other stuff here.
Okay, so we haven't done the Ask 31s in a while. Want to get to some NHL issues. And as we mentioned, Ryan Creelan's going to be dropping by a little bit later on. We got one really interesting tweet request about our top 10 games of all time. As people might want to go on some binge hockey watching, we've got some recommendations there. But let's just fire off a couple of quick Ask 31s and we'll do them later on in the podcast as well. This one came in for last week's show, which we didn't end up getting to. Apologies. From Kevin Rogers. Does Seattle get picks in the 2021 draft, and how is their pick determined? Also, can they sign UFAs on July 1st, 2021? So I'm under the impression, Elliot, that Seattle will have the same guidelines as Vegas.
That's true.
So same odds as the team that would finish third worst, and so they wouldn't drop lower than sixth in the first round.
They were told that their expansion rules would be the same as Vegas's. So I believe that to be the case, yes.
Okay, this one's interesting. This is from, and by the way, great Twitter handle here. You ready for this, Freach?
Okay.
Ping Pong Bundy. You want to laugh? There it is. If the Stanley Cup got canceled, which deadline buyer got screwed the most? Ooh, who paid the most for nothing?
Whoa.
My knee jerk is Tampa, the first round pick for Barkley Goodrow, but that might just be too obvious.
And for Coleman, they traded two first rounders.
Oh.
And one of those is the Vancouver one.
Correct. How, you know, how is this? Hey, let me ask you a question. Maybe you have you can point us to some direction on this one. For teams that made trades with conditional picks.
Yes, this is a good question.
Based on teams going, you know, one round in the playoffs, second round, semifinal, getting to the Stanley Cup. How is that going to be determined now? Or is that all going to be pushed to next season? Do we know?
I have looked into this. And I've been told that, first of all, the NHL recognizes, and the Players Association, they're almost certainly going to need to rework the critical dates calendar. Like, for example, June 1st, Scott Perunovich, for example, he has to sign by June 1st, or technically he becomes a free agent. He's a St. Louis Blues former first-round draft pick who's playing college hockey. All of this could change. For example, the July 1st free agency, that could change. All of this stuff is probably going to be changing in terms of who, what, when, where. Also, if we do have playoffs that go into July, What about coaches and players whose contracts are up on June 30th? All of this is going to have to be reworked. Now, one of the things that I asked about that with is, for example, if you're a Wild fan or a Pittsburgh fan, the Zucker trade has that condition in it. If you're a Calgary fan or an Edmonton fan, the whole Lucic-Neal, who scores how many goals, does Calgary get the third round pick? All of that is in it. And at this point in time, I've been told that it will depend on what the conclusion of the season ultimately looks like, that they'll sit down and figure out all of those issues.
Now, did you see, by the way, moments ago before we went on the air, what the QMJHL did?
That they canceled the rest of the season. Apparently the Western Hockey League is following suit. I have not seen an OHL note yet. But you have to figure if one's doing it and then two are doing it, all three are doing it.
I would imagine as well. And then the commissioner determining the general standings.
The OHL, by the way, is expected to do it Wednesday. I just got a text.
Right. So that's the very latest news, just so we keep as much of this podcast as clean and edit-free for our producer, Emil, as we can. So that is the very latest as it relates to the real world and how it affects hockey. Okay, Elliot, then, if the playoffs are scrubbed, what does this mean for escrow? Guys, grouse, and you can understand why, when it's at 15%, how high could it get?
It's at 14 this year, Jeff, and there is real concern it could go somewhere between 30 and 35.
Oof.
That's what guys are preparing for.
30 and 35? That's a whopper off every check.
If there's no plus. Now, I also believe that the NHL realizes that's not exactly a good thing for it either. I wouldn't be surprised if there's conversation about spreading that over a couple of years, particularly if the hope with the Seattle coming in. I mean, we don't know where this is going to take us now financially. We're in such a wild situation here with no real idea of where life is going to go. I mean, there was hope for Seattle. There was hope for the new US TV deal. And maybe that will change everything for the better. But players are worried about that number hitting 30 or 35. And I believe there's already been some conversation about whether or not that can be spread out over a couple of seasons.
Well, then that sort of begets the question, then why not just bundle this all into a CBA negotiation and come up with a new collective bargaining agreement out of all of this? I mean, isn't one of the true things here, Elliot, that more so than ever, in order to get out of this Gordian knot, the NHL and the Players Association have to work closely, have to work together to get through all this mud?
I would think so, because I think they're going to work together on the cap. If the cap goes down, you know, basically, look, the league was a $5 billion league in terms of revenue last season. They were talking on the conference call last week with all the teams that they could lose $1 billion in revenue for this. That's 20%. That would knock the cap way down. The thing about that is, you know, the league doesn't want teams having to buy out four guys either. It doesn't make sense. So I think they'd work together on it and see kind of where they go. The one thing that's interesting is last week, last Saturday night, 11:59 p.m. Eastern time, the NFL and the NFLPA had a vote that the deadline was then for their new CBA. And there were a number of star players, Aaron Donald, J.J. Watt, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. Those guys went public and said they were voting no. I think Watt even put out a tweet that said hard no. And it got passed, and it was close. It was 1,000-something to 900-something. Like normally, Jeff, when we see these votes, it's the Players Association voted 800-2 to agree to the new CBA. Like this one wasn't like that. It was close. It was not a huge majority at all. And even the voting on the team reps to support it was something like 17-14. It was very, very close. And with all the stars voting no, I think one of the reasons that it voted yes was just some of the points for maybe players who didn't have as guaranteed careers, more roster spots, things like that, they carried the way. And there were some people, and you know, people will argue with this. I agree. I'm talking a little bit off the side of my knowledge here, but there were some belief that just the whole uncertainty, even though the NFL seems to be everything proof, just the uncertainty of where we're going, some people voted yes. And I just wonder if the league and the players say, okay, this really hammered us here. We have a conversation about the cap. We have a conversation about escrow, because I think the players understand that the way the deal is done, it's got to be paid. You can't just say, make us forsake it, because the insurance, from what I understand on the league's point of view, is not going to be enough to cover for the losses if the playoffs go away. So I think the players know it's not like this can go anywhere. If you do a CBA with cap, maybe done for a couple years, escrow, done for a couple of years, Olympics, and an extension, I think there's going to be a willingness to at least converse here and see if they can do it. I'll tell you this, though, Jeff, one thing that a couple guys did say to me, they wonder if there's going to have to be, and I don't know the answer to this, I'm just telling you it's out there. I'm not telling you it's true, I'm just telling you it's what I heard. There are some people worried if there might have to be compliance buyouts as part of this.
Ouch. Okay, so this is going to get even messier before it shakes clear.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't think anybody really knows, but I think they're kind of prepared for all of this. But again, it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the official podcast, not the drinking game, is that people, you know, they realize there's nothing we can do here. You can just try to enjoy it as the best you can and hope we get an answer.
So do you want an idea for recapturing some lost revenue?
Sure.
Okay, so this comes to us from a text exchange that I had yesterday with someone in the industry who I believe would not like this idea attributed to him.
Who is it?
Next season, you're not going to get it out of me. Next season, two Stanley Cups are awarded. Here's how you do it. This season is scrubbed. You come back and you finish the 2019-2020 season from October to December. Merry Christmas. Someone just got the Stanley Cup. The NHL pauses. It comes back in mid-January and you treat it like a lockout shortened season. And you play into deeper June, maybe into July. And you have a 2020 Stanley Cup winner and a 2021 Stanley Cup winner. You supercharge every single game by taking one complete season, chopping it in half, finishing 1 year, and then having what would normally be a half season in the other year, and awarding not one, but two Stanley Cups next season.
I love the idea. I think it's a great idea. I just don't know if it's feasible. First of all, if you're the players, you're going to want more games, not less, right?
Well, next year you're going to have the exact same amount of games anyhow.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right? So you're picking up in October.
Okay, so how would you work your playoffs? Does everyone get to be in?
I don't know that. I don't have any. We didn't go that far into our text conversation. These are all details that can be worked out. But essentially, you're going to finish up your 19-20 season starting in October next
year.
Let's
have a conversation about it. I think it's interesting. Does everybody get to be in?
My knee jerk is no.
So then you've got Detroit.
Yep.
Not playing until January.
You're having your teams that would be in contention right now.
So what do you do with your teams that don't make it?
Don't know. Haven't got that far.
Second question is, when's free agency?
Free agency happens in the offseason, so yes, some players will be changing jerseys.
So they play for the new team or the old team?
They play for the new team.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I think that's... Normally, I would say that part of the idea is horrible, but I think for this year, I would say, okay.
I remember we had this conversation last week. Like, everything is on the table. Here's an idea that's on the table. I don't know what to do with those other teams. If you can maybe even start in September, you cobble together the remainder of what would be a regular season, and then you get to the playoffs. Maybe the first round is best two out of three. I don't know how you want to do it. Best out of five seems to get more favor than two out of three, but that's where we are. And you're awarding the cup sometime in late December, and then you're starting up again.
I have to tell you, I don't think that's a bad idea, except for what do you do with those teams who can't compete for the cup?
Don't know. But you're supercharging every single ticket. There's no longer an empty calorie Tuesday night game. Hey, it's fun because it's the NHL and these are elite level athletes, but it's game 52 on a Tuesday night. That's gone.
Okay, I'm taking this to another level.
Okay.
I'm taking your idea and I'm merging it with my idea that just came off your idea and the idea of Mr. or Mrs. X, who you're not saying who it is.
Okay.
We do a tournament.
Ooh.
A Champions League kind of thing. Or an FA Cup kind of thing.
This is for the beginning of next season?
So you do the you start the season in September. By the way, I got to tell you, before I do this, there was a guy who reached out to me, and he'll laugh when he hears this. I went on Calgary Radio last week, and I said something similar. Maybe you start the Stanley Cup in September. You do it there. You do it like in a month. Instead of training camp, you have the Stanley Cup tournament.
Okay.
And he texted me and said, that's the dumbest idea ever. Don't ever say that again. So here's the idea.
Okay.
You start the season, but at the same time, you have a tournament. From, okay, let's make it September to December. You figure out how many teams you want in.
Yeah.
This one might not be 24. This one might be 22, whatever. Maybe it's 24. I don't care. Put as many teams in as you want. But it has to end by New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you could even do this. But you'd still have playoff games at the same time as you'd have regular season games. Could you even do it? I am thinking about this off the top of my head.
I don't know if you can do that.
This is going to be up to the listeners to figure this out and tell me how stupid I am. But the thing is, Jeff,
normally I love the most alien ideas out there for everything. This one, I really need some time to go for a walk with my dog with.
Okay, so here's another idea. What if you have that Stanley Cup tournament as training camp for a month and a half, and then you start the season after?
Hang on, Sam, you want a tournament to determine the Stanley Cup instead of training camp?
Except for the teams who don't qualify, yes.
Before the guys get ready to go, here's your training camp, drop the puck, we're playing for the Stanley Cup.
Well, you have a couple week training camp before that, and maybe those teams get some exhibition games.
As long as we have some type of training camp.
But the other
camp here,
seven teams,
injuries,
they play with each other, I guess.
For like what?
They don't make the playoffs. I don't know. What? They have exhibition games.
Oh, la-di-da. What would you rather watch?
Well, no, but I'm saying like there are some teams that shouldn't be in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah.
If you create this, you shouldn't have them in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Yeah.
The only problem with all of this, and you've nailed it, is what do you do with those other teams?
Well, if you do it in September, you have them as they can play exhibition games against each other. There's going to be seven teams, right?
Yeah.
There's the three LA teams. They usually play exhibition games against each other to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Ottawa, and you've got Detroit, and you've got Buffalo, and you've got New Jersey. It's not generally too hard for them to play exhibition games against each other.
You send those teams overseas, and those become your NHL touring teams in the preseason.
If anyone's going to want to go overseas in the preseason.
Who knows? Yes. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, then again, if you're playing games, you're assuming you can go overseas, right?
Correct. But you know what I do wonder out of all of this, too, considering how much of a gate-driven league the NHL is? The one thing I do wonder is, what happens once you tell people it's safe to come back? And I not just for sports, but for concerts, for any gathering. We're going to go through a period of time here now where psychologically it's being beaten into us, don't gather. You know, and maybe I'm just too much of a fan of the movie Jaws, and I have been my entire life, but just because the mayor says it's safe to go to the beach again, you know what I mean? I just wonder what happens to the psychology of a fan here.
Well, that I do, and I think that we understand that you can't start this up and then have to stop again.
No.
So that's the whole thing that people who are smarter than me
drink
are worried about here is that what's the second wave? Is there a second wave?
Okay, back to the fun stuff. You know what I really miss?
Boy, we've really created some craziness here.
Hey, that's okay, man. Everything's on the table. Everything is up for grabs. Tweet in your goofy ideas and we'll send them to the NHL. You know what I really miss? Towards the last few weeks, Zdeno Chara was must-watch television.
Yep.
You know why?
Why?
Because he was launching hockey sticks into the season ticket holders' laps. I really miss that. I wish Chara started to do this earlier in his career. Sean tweets this one in at Ask 31. As funny as Chara launching sticks to the moon is, man, was it funny. How is that not a penalty every single time? No different than chopping a stick out of someone's hands, which seems to get called almost all the time. You know what I say to both?
What's that?
Neither should be a call unless they're egregious. A stick lift is fine. Squeeze your stick. A stick chop just because you dropped your stick because you're not squeezing it. Too bad.
Well, the one thing I remember is that you can't do it into the crowd, right?
If it ends up there, I mean, it's going to end up there.
Remember Sundin got suspended.
But that was him throwing the stick. This isn't throwing the stick. This is lifting someone's stick and it ends up in the stands.
I got to tell you, if they saw Chara do that and he launched it into orbit like that, he would get in trouble for that. You can't have that.
There's nets. There's nets now. Come on, Elliot. Have some fun.
Yeah. You know, there are situations where you can move the stick away, and there are situations where you can't do that. So as long as, I guess, you follow the rules as stated in the rule book, that's fine. It is hilarious.
I think it's so funny just because he's the biggest guy in the league, too, and he's just throwing sticks around. I don't know. It's hilarious. Okay, another one from JD Simon 86. Things are bad in Buffalo. Can fans finally expect to see the major changes to the roster that have been needed? All we hear is that Botts is trying, but what's the point? Trying's not good enough for ownership? What's up in Buffalo?
You know, here's an interesting thing about that. I was talking to someone the other day, and they said to me, what about situations where guys thought they were going to get fired? Do their jobs get saved now? And I don't know if anybody knows that. You know, for example, New Jersey, they said they were going through a full search, even though Tom Fitzgerald's there. Mm-hmm. What if you can't search?
Yeah, then everyone who was interim keeps their jobs. Unless you already have the preferred candidate in mind.
Well, maybe you do. I mean, that's entirely possible, but you can't really bring anybody in.
Nope.
Now, if the season gets canceled and the calendar gets moved back, maybe you can do it. But, you know, what if we play playoffs and a lot of guys might be involved with these teams? Do teams say, hey, just get lost and go do your interview with that other team? They might have business to do. That's one of the questions here is, you know, do some of these teams that were thinking of making changes now say, all right, you get another year.
And so everyone keeps their interim tag for another year?
Or maybe guys who were had a chance of getting fired.
See, I wonder about the interim guys. Like, I wonder about Alain Nezverdin, for example.
Well, I would think that he's got a chance to keep the job, right?
I would think so too, but if not, how are you doing a search now?
I think it's a great question. You can't really interview anyone except for Skype. Now, I will say one person did say to me, he thinks that it's like doing the draft, right? And you could really appreciate this. You have a draft list and you sometimes change it based on the interview. Should you really be changing your draft list based on the interview?
Yes, you should. I think so. Unless it's like the first or second overall pick. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's fair. But sometimes teams do believe they overthink it by a meeting. Does this person charm the room, for example? And then as opposed to you look at the job they've done on the ice or running a team or whatever they do. But I think that is one of the biggest questions is, will some people get a reprieve? Will some people who are potentially going to be changed or fired, will they get a reprieve because the season ended this way? I think there's a real question about that. And I think Buffalo is definitely one of those situations. You know, Botterill has another year under contract. Now, if they've just decided they were going to make changes anyway, maybe that's what you do. But can you do a proper search now? I think that's the other thing here. Do you have the opportunity to do it properly?
Let me give you the interview example. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when Minnesota was looking for a new general manager, we all heard this is Ron Hextall's job to lose.
And it was.
This is Ron Hextall, and then Bill Guerin came in and blew the room away.
I think that's half the story. I think the other half of the story is that Hextall went in there and told them things that they didn't want to hear. He was blunt and he was honest, but it wasn't what they wanted to hear. That also helped open up the door for Guerin.
All right, we move on. Weston sends this one in. Is there a future where NHL players wear full face protection? And then he adds, and why not? Assuming the answer is going to be no. I've always said that we're heading that direction.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't hear that one. Now, that's not to say that it's not on the radar somewhere, but I never hear it coming up.
We've seen more and more players getting pucks in the face and skates in the face, and we're all whistling by it right now. Like, is it going to have to take a significant career-ending injury to a superstar until you finally have the conversation?
Well, we've already had them, really, right?
We have had frightening incidents.
Yeah.
And we've had careers that have been ended. And no disrespect to anyone who's gone through this and had their career either shortened or eliminated, but it hasn't happened to the superstar yet.
Yeah.
Is that what it's going to take?
Well, you know, we had a superstar whose career was threatened, and thankfully it turned out okay. How much do you think Sidney Crosby's concussions changed?
I don't know that that's because of face protection, though.
No, but I'm saying, you know, do we take concussions a lot more seriously?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes, we do. Yes. But it needed that injury for us to really pay more attention to it. Why wait is my point.
I just never hear it get brought up. Like one of the things we've kind of learned is about with goalies, it took a long time for that to get changed. I mean, you have to have real pull for it. And I confess, if it's out there, I don't hear it.
All right. On that, Elliot, I want to thank everyone for submitting some hashtag Ask31s. We had a couple of requests on the hashtag, by the way, Elliot, just to do entire podcasts where we take a flood of questions. And I'm safe to say we're open to it. We're going to hear now from Ryan Creelan. He's the commissioner of the ECHL. How would you put a frame around this one?
It's a tough story. There's no question about it. As everybody's probably aware by now, the ECHL canceled the rest of its season. You know, one of the things we talked about that I heard is that it was a very intense phone call and that was really heated. That there were certain teams who believed that the path was wrong, and there were certain teams who believed the path was right. And he disputes that a little bit. I'm going to leave you for the interview to hear it. In the 31 Thoughts blog, which will be released on Wednesday as this podcast is released, I spoke to a player, Jason Henry, and I think Jason shows some real courage by coming out and putting his voice to some of the concerns he had, that he was upset the players did not get a severance that they could be entitled to. This is also discussed in the interview with Ryan. And I also speak for the blog with Larry Landon, who runs the PHPA, which for those of you who are not familiar, is the NHLPA for players playing in leagues like the American Hockey League and the ECHL. And, you know, one agent said to me, Jeff, that this whole situation sucks. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are getting hurt, and it's not anyone's fault. but it sucks. And I think that's the right way to put it. And I hope, as we hear in the interview, that the ECHL and the PHPA are trying to find other solutions. I really hope that we can find a way to help some of these players, because that lost money, that's a big deal to them.
Let's get to the interview now on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Please be joined now by the commissioner of the ECHL, Ryan Creelan. Ryan, thank you, first of all. Thank you for joining us in these challenging circumstances. I'm sure right now you'd much rather be looking forward to handing out the Kelly Cup. But for the purposes of right now, the ECHL has been canceled for the season. Can you rewind us to last week, post-NHL making its announcement that its season had gone on hiatus?
Sure. I mean, I think it even starts a few hours or the night before with the NBA making their decision, and then it trickling through the sports industry. And when the NHL suspended, we were already convening our internal groups and discussing, and that certainly was important in our decision as well. So come to Thursday, and we suspended. And that was the prudent decision at that time. Tried to catch our breath, assess the scenario, and use the next couple of days to look at a whole host of factors. But with things moving so rapidly across sports, across local governance, across national governance, lots of phone calls internally for us with the players' union, with, again, some of those other authorities, to come to the decision, an excruciating decision, but what I believe is 100% the right decision. And, you know, as we advance forward here a few more days, I think that's being confirmed even more.
At what point, like, I'm curious sort of how this works from your chair. Who is your, when you make the decision that you did, who are the first phone calls to, and at what point do you bring the PHPA into the conversation?
Well, we bring the PHPA immediately into the conversation to get their perspective, what they're hearing from their players. We convene our board, which each team has a governor on our board. We also have an executive committee, so use them for immediate feedback. You know, it's not easy to get 26 guys online at the drop of a hat. We were able to do it very quickly, but I would tell you the conversation with the PHPA begins immediately, and then our executive committee and full board.
You know, Ryan, I understand it was quite a heated conversation, that there were some teams who supported the decision. There were other teams who didn't. And one of the things I heard was there was some real concern about future of some of the teams in general. How much did that play into the whole decision?
Yeah, so to go back to where you started, I wouldn't call it heated. There were varying viewpoints, and it was emotional. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of factors that everybody agreed on. I think, you know, in trying times and fast-moving times, we wanted to find a something to hold on to, a way to keep the season going. And so that's where it gets emotional. But lots of discussion, but again, I'm not willing to say it was heated.
Okay.
What was the second part of your question there?
Well, I heard that there were some concerns about some of the teams. Like, I did speak to Larry Landon, and I spoke to a few people, and that one of the things that everybody seems to be concerned about is just the future of some of the teams, that this is going to hit them really hard financially, and there was concern about everybody coming back for next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a top priority, is to maintain our league and our member teams. And Listen, at the end of the day, our business, we're community-based small businesses. We're under the spotlight of the sports angle, but that's who we are. And there is concern for our businesses, for other small businesses. Really, you look at the stock market and, a lot of economic activity is kind of seizing up right now. So, you know, as it relates to specific to the ECHL, we do have concern. I think, you mentioned some teams. I say all teams. You know, even our teams at the top in attendance are going to be significantly impacted by this. And so you could try and narrow it down to just a few teams, but I think it's all of our teams that will be impacted by this. And when you look across the sports industry, there's, you're talking about the entire March Madness tournament being canceled. I mean, think about the tentacles of that and the impact it has on the sports industry and the economy as a whole.
Are you concerned then that you won't be coming back next year with the same amount of teams that you had this year?
Concerned? Yes. Again, I'm concerned for a variety of things in sports and in the ECHL. But at this point, I believe we made the prudent decision to give us the best opportunity to maintain our league and set up our league for future growth for years to come. At this point, we're taking it a day at a time and making sure we're working together to try and help all of our members.
At what point are the players no longer getting paid? I seem to have kicking around in my head. It's next Monday. Is that correct?
So this Monday, and in working with the PHPA and addressing all of their concerns and all of our concerns, and working within the scope of our collective bargaining agreement, we brought the end of season through this Monday, and then again use our CBA to guide us on end of season procedures.
So I understand they're all getting paid their health care through June 30th. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And if they incur expenses to move back to their places of residence, will those be covered?
Yes. That's normal end of season travel home procedure.
Okay. I've learned a lot about the ECHL and the CBA with the PHPA the last couple of days, more than I ever realized was there. One of the things I didn't know that I just found out, Ryan, is that if a player is waived and doesn't get another job within 2 weeks, they get a 2-week severance. And I will tell you, there were some players who told me that that was something they were kind of hoping for. Was that in any way discussed, or would it be possible?
So we discussed it, but again, under our collective bargaining agreement, when you invoke end of season, there is no severance. But listen, we understand that this is a troubling time for everyone, for our teams, for our players, for all stakeholders in the ECHL community. And the PHPA recognizes that, and we recognize that as well. So, we'll be working as partners in hockey to try and assist everyone. The PHPA with their constituency, and certainly the ECHL with our memberships.
The other one I'd heard is somebody told me, and nobody from Newfoundland would confirm this, but somebody told me that Newfoundland offered to pay their players and they were told they couldn't. Is there anything to that?
So under our CBA end of season, any payment to an ECHL contracted player would be a salary cap violation. Mm. They have players on NHL, AHL contract as well. And, those are players that are employed by those entities. And so pending on what those decisions are made at that level will impact their contract and their salary.
Okay. Because the one thing I was wondering is this, I think everyone understands, I was talking to an agent today, Ryan, he said to me, this situation just sucks for everyone. He doesn't blame anyone. He doesn't think anyone's at fault. It's just a brutal situation for everyone. The one thing he did tell me was, is it possible that if a team like Newfoundland wanted to do it, recognizing this was a unique situation, that they should be allowed to go ahead and do it? Would that be considerable at all?
So I don't think so, because as the PHPA represents all their members and we represent all our teams, we act as a league and move forward as a league. And under the terms of our collective bargaining agreement, which take months, you know, collective bargaining takes months and months. We had hours and hours. And so we stayed within the terms of that agreement, and then we proceed accordingly as a league, as they proceed as a union. But again, we recognize these are extraordinary times, and we'll be working together. You know, I spoke with one player last night who's a player rep to the PHPA, and you're right, it sucks for everybody, but we're taking a long-term perspective on this and trying to be partners in hockey to help everyone. And as he said last night, some guys are going to be hit harder than others, and those are the guys that we need to find a way to help out here in the short term until we can all get through this.
I am curious, Ryan, who, I mean, you've been with the ECHL for a number of years in a number of different capacities as well. Is there anyone during this situation, considering it is so unique to all sports, is there anyone you can turn to for advice? Is there anyone you speak to on a regular basis?
Well, I use our executive committee and general counsel for feedback. You know, I've got a longstanding relationship with Larry Landon and the Players Union, and welcome their feedback. And again, to go back to what you said, heated discussion and things of that nature, we were all on the same page moving forward. Now, we were trying different avenues and different paths and trying to check all the boxes, but it became, I don't want to say it was clear because it was so emotional, but it got to a point where, you know, this was the decision. And when you start hearing that voice from constituents on both sides of the aisle, you know it's the right decision.
You know, one thing, Ryan, someone told me today, he said, I don't agree with everything here, but I know that this took a huge bite out of you. Can you just talk about what it's like personally to make a decision to say our league can't play and what you go through in those moments personally and professionally?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell you, you know, as the players heard the news and the emotions that they went through, and you're frustrated, you're upset because of the long hours, you're exhausted. But you're trying to gather all the facts in a very short period of time, or what you presume to be facts, and projecting off of it and getting feedback from all the different parties. It's quite a bit, some sleepless nights, no question, but you've got to make what you believe is the right decision. And at the time, I knew it was the right decision, but there are moments where you feel like it's the wrong decision. But as we, you know, reflect on it here a few days later, I'm confident it was the right decision.
It's tough to go through something like this and not learn something from it as well. And again, this is all new territory, as we mentioned. No one's been through this before. Mistakes will be made everywhere. And I think we all understand that. When you do come back, how will you be different, and how will the ECHL be different?
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, again, we're still moving through this. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty in the air. But I've been really proud of the way our league has pulled together in terms of, okay, we make the decision. We've got a path now. We're working off of that, but not just at our governor level, but in other departments. We've had calls yesterday with our athletic trainers to make sure the players can get up and get out of town, especially with all the travel bans and concerns going around. We've had a call with our ticketing departments in terms of how to address our fans and work with them. And we're going to continue to have those calls and really galvanize as a league. I think we've been going in that direction for a long time, but this has really shown how much we work together. You know, as we look to the future, I want to build on that. I still, again, there's a lot of uncertainty, but we're turning our eye to the 2021 season. It gives us a goal and a path here. And I think we'll continue to look at the facts and scenarios in the coming days, the coming weeks, and address what that looks like. Yeah, quite honestly, I hope this whole thing disappears tomorrow and we never hear the word coronavirus ever again. I find that remarkably unlikely. So we're going to continue to just go with the facts as they present to us and make a call based on those facts.
I guess my last question, Ryan, is both you and Larry Landon, when I spoke to him today, indicated that you are still working on some things for the players, whether it's now or in the future. What kinds of things possibly could we be talking about here?
Well, what is already in place under our CBA is a career enhancement program where players can go and learn a trade or take courses. So that's already in place. And I think some players would take that up anyway at the end of the season. And here we are, you know, a few weeks early, so they can take that up. We have a player hardship fund. So that will be looked at. And again, as that one player said to me, some players will be hit harder than others. So how can we build that fund up and then react on a case by case or perhaps a blanket scenario, but make sure that we're supporting everyone within our community on both sides of the aisle.
Ryan, we appreciate this. Very generous with your time. Thank you so much. I know it's challenging right now. Thanks for parking some time with us today.
Okay, guys. Take care now.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Ryan Creelan. Want to finish up the podcast today, Elliot, by referring to a tweet we got recently from someone, a hockey fan living in Dubai, who wants us to list our favorite hockey games of all time. Top 10 games of all time. So you've picked five and I've picked five. I think you've also included your favorite game so far this season, correct?
Yes, the viewer or tweeter who said he's from Dubai, he asked for five this year, so I picked a few from this year.
Okay, excellent. You know, it turns out, because I spent a few hours thinking about this one last night, man, all of mine, except for one, are all international hockey games. I don't know what that says about me as a hockey fan, but when
I picked a couple of NHL ones.
Yeah, I got one NHL one, only one. Out of all of them, and we'll get there in a second, but in no particular order. Okay, for me, September 2nd, 1972.
Mm-hmm.
You know what game that was? Game one. The Soviets beat Team Canada in Montreal. It's game one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was looking like a laugher early. Everyone thought Team Canada was going to roll over the Soviets. Esposito scores 30 seconds in. And I recently went back and watched 72, and you can see Esposito laughing as he skates by the bench, like, oh, this is going to be easy. Henderson scores. He makes it 2-0. And then by the end of the first, after Vlad Petrov scores to tie things up, we're 2-2 going into the second period, and the Soviets explode and take it away. And the stunning visual of all the Team Canada players along the blue line, exhausted, both mentally and physically. To me, that's the story of the tournament. I know it makes me a bad Canadian not to say Henderson scores for Canada in game eight, but that to me was the tournament. And this is what started international hockey at the pro level. I'm taking that game. I'm also taking the best game I was ever at, and that's the 1987 Canada Cup game three. Gretzky to Lemieux, Larry Murphy's the ultimate decoy. I've never been in a louder building in my life than Cops Coliseum in 87. 1976 Canada Cup tournament. I didn't know which one to pick, but it's going to be one of those two games. Team Canada against Czechoslovakia in the final. Daryl Sittler scores to make it 5-4. This is after Czechoslovakia had already beaten Team Canada 1-0. And the one thing that I always remember is Vladimir Zurilla, who was the goaltender for Czechoslovakia, who was outstanding. And as I found out years later, was Dominik Hasek's idol. And if you go back and watch the 76 Canada Cup, you realize why a lot of Hasek's style is borrowed from Vladimir Zorilla. So you're watching this old goalie in 76, who, by the way, also had a job as a refrigerator repairman. You're watching Vlad Zorilla play, and you're like, wow, this is like what Hasek did so many years later. And then when the 76 videos came out, you realize Scotty Bowman did some really cool things. Like Larry Robinson played shifts on the wing. During the penalty kill, Bowman would put three defensemen out there to kill penalties. It was a fascinating tournament. The first pro international tournament. And to me, pick those two games, probably the 5-4 game would have been the better of the two. And I loved Vlad Zorilla because of it. Rogie Vachon was full value as well. The only NHL game that I have on there is Game 6, 1987 Stanley Cup Final, Philadelphia Flyers and Edmonton Oilers. They call this the night the Spectrum shook. It was after J.J. Daigneau scored.
Comuni at the left point. In the Tekin and breaking in as Gretzky toward the net. Curry knocks down the pass. Picked off by the Flyers. And Crossman up to Zezel on the right wing with 5:39 remaining in regulation. Up the middle, a pass trying to find prop again. The Oilers to the point. Daigneau's at. Score!
I'll tell you, these people are going crazy.
Right? Flyers win this game 3-2. Was the loudest that building has ever been. Game 6, 1987. The night the Spectrum shook. Edmonton goes on the next game to win by a score of 3-1 in one of the best Stanley Cup finals ever, in the best year for hockey ever, 1987. But give me game 6 all day long. Two more real quick. 2014 Sochi Olympics. Canada wins 3-2. Marie-Philippe Poulin with the overtime winner on a power play. But to me, Kelly Stack almost scoring on the empty net, but the puck rolls and hits the goalpost, is going to be one of the enduring hockey images that'll be with me for my entire life. And the other one, just because of the emotion involved in it, March 21st and 28th, 1969, you can watch these games on YouTube. The Worlds were supposed to be held in Prague, but this was after the Soviet tanks rolled in down the cobblestone streets. So they moved it to Stockholm. And this is after the 1968 invasion. And this is Czechoslovakia versus Soviet Union. And there were two games, both won by Czechoslovakia, 2-0 and 4-3. And all those players to a person, I remember Bobby Holík telling me about his dad, Yaroslav, who played in that tournament, said they would rather die than lose that game. If you want to talk about emotion and talk about players really hating the other side, to the point where Yaroslav Halík covered up the star that all the Czechoslovakian players were forced to wear by the Soviet Union. This was the most intense hockey hatred the game has ever seen. And Jan Suchy, who was always considered the European Bobby Orr, was fantastic in this tournament. So those are my five. Those are the five that stand out to me. And that Czechoslovakia-Soviet matchup, if you want to see real emotion, I mean, Yaroslav Halík is, you know, pointing his finger at Viktor Zinger, who's the Soviet goaltender, like right in his face after scoring a goal, knocking the net off. Like, I don't know if you've seen these games, Elliot. I've never seen emotion like that and international hatred, the likes of which March 21st and 28th, 1969, Czechoslovakia versus Soviet Union. You go now.
Amal, I need a ruling. First of all, it is March 17th as we record this. It will be March 18th as we release it. That's 50 years, just shy of 50 years. Do people still have to drink because Jeff referenced a 50-plus-year-old game that is a week shy? Like, do you still have to drink for that, Amal? Like, what's the ruling?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you still have to drink. That's Jeff, that's a great list, I have to say. When you talk about that hockey game, I watched a documentary a couple of years ago about the 1956 Melbourne Olympics water polo match, Blood in the Water, Hungary, USSR.
Oh, yeah? Ooh.
Yes. The match took place months after the Hungarian Revolution. And it was the dirtiest water polo match ever. Hungary won 4-0, but there was literally blood in the water. So I'm fascinated by that kind of stuff. It's great. I have all three games from 1987 at the Canada Cup in the final are on my list. They were all great games. Games 1 and 2 are forgotten. Canada was down big in game one, came back and lost. Game two was double overtime. It was a brilliant game. I also put the 2002 and 2010 gold medal games. I think everybody should watch them. But I tried to pick some NHL games for you that were older, and here's the ones I came up with. April 20th, 1984, I will never forget watching the Good Friday Massacre between Quebec and Montreal.
Oh, the Slager and Hamel.
Yes, the brawl at the end of one period, and they forgot to tell the players who were ejected at the beginning of the second. We know now Steve Shutt going to Mark Hunter in the intermission and saying, what are you going to do about this?
And a fight started to the left of Bouchard.
Look at this. They got both clubs coming on the ice. Look
this
out.
This is bad.
Look out.
At the siren, everybody is on the ice.
Look out. Nyland is after somebody in back of the pack, and away they go. Spare goaltenders. Everybody's on there now, and the melee starts. Sevigny right in the middle of it with Malarchuk, and there is a pileup down there that is dangerous because somebody could get hurt.
Now you notice the referee Bruce Hood, he will not get too
involved. Look at this. Sevigny and Malarchuk Bob are going at it. The two spare goalies down in the corner.
Bruce Hood is standing back there, you notice, and he is assessing the situation, but just, he's going to have the handout. A heck of a pile of penalties when this is all settled away. I'll tell you.
I mean, I remember watching that game and fighting to stay up late to see it. Men Montreal came back to win big.
You know who was in the crowd and they got a visual of him?
Who's that?
And this is a couple of weeks before he was murdered gangland style. Dino Bravo was
really
in the crowd there. Yeah. Hockey Night found it. Hockey Night found the viz. Might want to ask Kathy Broderick about that.
Okay, we'll find out about that. Dino Bravo, wow, yeah. The Canadian strongman. I think everybody should watch Game 7, 93, Kings Leafs. Gretzky so at his greatest. I'll never forget that game. And I also put as a more recent great game, I think it gets kind of lost for what a great show it was, Game 7 of the 2014 Western Conference Final, Kings-Chicago. Kings win in overtime. That was an unbelievable hockey game.
And you know what that was, too? That was a great call by Bob Cole. I remember that entire series going, wow, this is vintage Bob Cole.
All 9 goals had strange bounces involved with them. What a series.
What a series, I'll say. And as they shake hands out there, I'd like to pass on a word or two to you people who have been tweeting about our broadcasts. There have been thousands of them. All of us say thanks. Thanks for your comments. Thanks for being a fan of Hockey Night in Canada. We're all happy you enjoyed the series. Chicago fans, not so happy. But as you just said, Gary, what an effort by these Chicago Blackhawks to keep coming back. The LA Kings kept coming back. All through the playoffs, they had to show they had something special. Well, tonight, they have something special. They have the Clarence Campbell Bowl and the Western Championship and a trip to the Stanley Cup.
You look at the LA Kings, you know.
Let's not look at the birth certificate here. Let's just judge the work. That was outstanding by Cole.
Yes. So, and then games this year. So I was asked for 5 games this year. I came up with 6. The 2 games of the Battle of Alberta. January 11th, the Kachuk-Cassian night. January 29th, the stick throw night. I thought those were 2 great games. I also came up with Tampa Bay-Boston right before the end of the season, that Saturday night game. I seem to like a lot of violence.
You're a very violent person.
I don't know. Man. These emotional games, we don't have too many of them anymore. I really love them.
Those games used to be called Tuesday.
That's right. And now we don't see them much. And then I picked 3 other games that were different for other reasons. I picked Sedin night because I thought it was just a fantastic ceremony. You watch the ceremony with the game. And Markstrom with a great performance. And I picked, let me guess, there's 2 teams this year. I picked 2 games of theirs. Can you guess which 2 teams they are?
Edmonton?
No, I already picked Edmonton and Alberta and Calgary. They were there twice. So a second 2 teams I picked, 2 games of theirs.
Second 2 games.
Eastern Conference.
Pittsburgh, Washington.
No, not this year. It's not bad that you don't get it.
Detroit, Ottawa.
No, no.
Oh, okay.
When it's over, you'll kick yourself for not thinking of it. I'm stopped torturing you because I've got a radio interview I got to go do.
Oh, okay, go. Shoot.
Toronto, Carolina.
Oh, jeez.
December 23rd, 8-6 Leafs, five goals in the third period.
Yeah, and then
the David Ayers game.
You know, the David Ayers game is going to be legendary when we look back at the season that was when it's finally wrapped up. The one thing I do want to point out, too, for those that may not be familiar with it, Elliot mentioned the Canada Cup 1987, which was tremendous hockey. That's still the best hockey that I think most of us had ever seen. Do you remember the score of the final three games?
6-5.
All three of them. Do you remember the score of Game 8 in the Summit Series, 1972?
That's really good. 6-5.
Yeah, 6-5 I've always considered to be the Canada-Russia score.
It's very good.
There you go. That's all I got for you.
Very good.
Now I'm all out of trivial stuff. Until the next podcast. Oh, by the way, we got to conclude on this one. For the next podcast, Frege, we need to, this from Mitch Drieger, with all the extra downtime we have, can we get a book list started from you guys?
Sure.
Want to do hockey books next time?
Sure. I'm just looking at all my books here. Yeah, I'll pick some. No question.
Okay, you do top five. I'll do top five. How about that?
All right, deal.
Bingo. There we go. Go do your radio interview.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Great job.
There he is. Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts, the podcast. And Amel, bud, Fried is gone. Just you and me. What do you want to do?
Start editing.
All right. Amel wants to start editing, and I want to stop talking. I am all out of words. Thanks so much for tuning in to the podcast. Listen, it's going to be a little bit different as we go through whatever this thing is right now that we're going through. But do know this, we are committed to keeping this podcast on the air, whether it's emergency podcasts, whenever big news breaks, if we do get big news, or just doing the regular goofy podcast where we throw around ideas and talk about vintage hockey games and books and stories and things that otherwise we normally wouldn't get a chance to talk to with you about. Anything you want to hear specifically, just send us a note using the hashtag Ask31. And why not, right? Like, we've got a lot of time. We all do. Maybe you have questions. Maybe we have answers. Or maybe we can just have conversations about your questions. Don't know. But if there's anything you want us to talk about or any people you want us to talk to, we are a hashtag away. On behalf of Elliot and Amel Merrick signing off here, thanks for joining us on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. We'll be back soon. I know soon has a different meaning to different people, but don't worry. We're not going anywhere. Wah, 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 wah. Well, love, love it, darling. Come and go with me. Don't let me baby under sea. I need you, darling. So come go with me.
Never give me a chance.